Sir Alex Ferguson transformed from a Glasgow toolmaker's apprentice into football's most decorated manager, not through tactical genius alone, but through leadership principles that transcend sport. Standing before Harvard Business School students in 2012, Ferguson distilled 5 decades of experience into wisdom now studied by CEOs worldwide. His philosophy centers on a deceptively simple idea. The job of a leader is to inspire people to be better than they think they can be. Ferguson's methods reveal that true leadership isn't about barking orders. It's about observation, discipline, and creating systems where excellence becomes inevitable. His approach offers lessons for anyone building teams, whether in boardrooms or classrooms, proving that leadership's fundamental principles remain constant across all fields of human endeavor. Ferguson's career transformed when assistant Archie Knox convinced him to observe training from the sidelines rather than conduct it. This distance provided invaluable perspective, allowing him to detect subtle shifts in players' moods, energy levels, and habits invisible when directly involved. "It was the most important management decision of my career," he reflects. This observational approach yielded significant dividends. While scouting, he noticed Ji-Sung Park's relentless work rate, who later became instrumental in Ferguson's tactical plans against elite European teams. In 1969, Ferguson observed West Germany training without goalkeepers, focusing entirely on possession, a concept he immediately adopted. Ferguson's curiosity extended beyond football. He studied leadership across disciplines, drawing inspiration from UCLA's John Wooden, the Packers' Vince Lombardi, and military history. After attending SAS training, he adapted their flanking attack formations to football tactics. His reading reflected this broad approach. He consumed accounts of Lincoln's cabinet and JFK's crisis management while dismissing most football autobiographies as superficial. Ferguson's approach to discipline originated in Glasgow's working-class neighborhoods, where his shipbuilder father instilled punctuality and work ethic as sacred values. "My father would shake me awake at 6 a.m. and leave precisely at 6:45 to be at the yard when the gates opened," explaining why Ferguson routinely arrived at United's training ground before the milkmen. At Manchester United, Ferguson established clear professional standards by replacing mismatched tracksuits with formal club blazers, regulating hairstyles, and banning excessive jewelry. These weren't arbitrary rules, but a deliberate culture-building strategy. "When you see players walking around like they're in a fashion show, they're thinking about themselves, not the team." Ferguson's disciplinary approach operated on a graduated scale, from the silent treatment for minor infractions to fines, exclusion, and ultimately transfer for serious violations. When Eric Cantona kicked a Crystal Palace fan in 1995, Ferguson suspended his star player while publicly defending him against excessive criticism. This balanced approach earned unwavering commitment from his players, who understood principles mattered more than short-term results. What separates the good from the great? For Ferguson, the answer lies in drive, a combination of work ethic, emotional fortitude, concentration, and refusal to accept defeat. "Drive is more potent than raw talent," Ferguson insists, citing players like Brian Robson, Roy Keane, and Steve Bruce, who achieved greatness through determination rather than natural gifts. Ferguson's work ethic was legendary, missing only 3 matches out of approximately 1,500 during his tenure. At Aberdeen, he and assistant Archie Knox would drive 6 hours round-trip to scout opponents, reasoning, "If we miss one game in Glasgow, we'll miss 2. His players understood talent alone wouldn't secure their position. The most successful United teams featured players whose drive infected the entire squad. From Robson performing 1,000 daily press-ups despite injuries, to Keane's exacting standards that elevated everyone around him. This hunger proved crucial during United's famous comeback victories. The team's ability to score decisive goals in the final minutes, Fergie time, reflected a collective refusal to accept defeat, exemplified when United scored two injury time goals to win the 1999 Champions League final, completing an unprecedented treble. Ferguson's approach extended beyond the first team to creating the pipeline, a comprehensive structure ensuring sustainable success. When he arrived in 1986, he found a club with just 4 or 5 departments and approximately 85 employees. Rather than focusing immediately on the team, Ferguson rebuilt the club's infrastructure with patience. Central to this approach was United's youth development system. "I always wanted to know what our team would look like 3 years ahead," Ferguson explains, contrasting with the short-term thinking prevalent elsewhere. The 1999 treble-winning squad demonstrated this success, with half of the 30-player group under 25, including homegrown talents like Beckham, Giggs, Butt, the Nevilles, and Scholes. When pundit Alan Hansen claimed, "You can't win anything with kids," after United's 1995 loss, Ferguson believed precisely the opposite. "You'll never win anything without them." Ferguson established clear development paths from youth system to first team. Young players were protected from media pressure while being mentored by veterans, creating a self-sustaining cycle where young players brought energy while their loyalty built a strong cultural foundation. Balance was Ferguson's key to successful teams. He approached team building like a jigsaw puzzle, maintaining an average squad age of 26 by blending youth with experience. "It's impossible to win with identical talents," he noted. Ferguson valued versatility in players like Giggs and O'Shea, reliability from workhorses like McClare and Irwin, and durability from Bruce and Cantona. He particularly prized creative attackers who see what others cannot, balancing match winners like Ronaldo and Cantona with foundation players like Keane and Vidic. Every 4 years, Ferguson rebuilt his team, making clinical decisions regardless of players' past contributions. "The hardest part of rebuilding is leaving out the players who have been the foundation of your success. New signings needed adaptation time. Evra and Vidic took 6 months to settle, while academy graduates inherently understood United's style." When character clashes arose, Ferguson was decisive. When Cole and Sheringham refused to speak despite playing as striking partners, he threatened dismissal if their personal feelings affected performance. His ideal captain possessed leadership desire, trustworthiness, team respect, and adaptability, though Ferguson always remained the ultimate decision maker. What distinguishes Ferguson's leadership is its lasting impact. His retirement in 2013 marked the end of an era at Manchester United after 26 years, when he prioritized family, especially his wife Kathy. Ferguson cites Bob Paisley succeeding Bill Shankly at Liverpool as a rare successful transition. Paisley maintained Shankly's team while gradually improving it, winning 3 European Cups, a model of evolution few organizations achieve. In retirement, Ferguson balances engagement with a different pace through roles as United board member, Harvard lecturer, and UEFA ambassador. What he misses most isn't trophies, but daily interactions with staff and players. "Most of all, I miss being around young people eager to take on impossible challenges," he reflects. Before retiring, Ferguson received simple advice: "Don't put your slippers on." His legacy shows that true leadership isn't measured just in trophies, but in developing people and establishing enduring standards. The ultimate test of leadership is what continues to flourish after you've gone.